Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's your breath in our lungs, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Gary Lineker is back. Unlike Liverpool, it's Monday, 13th of March. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm David College.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushan Hamdaraja.
Welcome, everybody. Oh, what a magnificent Monday we're all having right now. Core. Did anybody manage to see much of the football on the weekend?
Well, you know what? I saw more of the football than I thought, actually. They showed all the goals.
Really?
No commentators. None of this game of two halves.
Replays made it easy for penalty calls to be understood.
None of this kind of woke analysis that you get.
Is this you throwing your hat in to become MP for Blackpool?
And I got to the pub for last orders.
There we
like are. A normal person.
Like a normal person. Well,
just
everybody.
Just enjoying the footy. Footy.
There are some people thinking, what on earth's going on? We'll get to that, everybody. But before we do, we are going to keep our highlights section. Of course, highlights of the weekend, unlike some other people, it will be traditional. Jim, what was your highlight of the weekend?
Well, as you know, Marcus, I went to watch Fulham v Arsenal.
I do know.
Because you were sat next to me.
Indeed.
And as we were leaving the ground, a delightful young man turned around to us with his hat on and went, I'm listening to you now.
Mm.
And it was just lovely. It was just a lovely moment. So, hello, mate. Great to meet you. That was a very sweet, weird little moment for all of us, wasn't it?
Yeah. Why did you just flick him the V's when he walked off?
I did not do that, you fiend.
I thought you were going to say, I'm listening to you right now. I was like, oh, cheers. Can you shut the fuck up?
trying to do something nice.
Yeah. I prefer it when I've got a pause button with you two.
Lovely. David, your highlight of the weekend.
This newfangled mad version of Nick Pope.
Yes,
he just keeps having these weird brain freezes. So first half of the season, yep, very quiet, uh-huh, underrated, part of that under the radar, brilliant Newcastle defence, and then suddenly for the past month or so, he's had a few these mad moments.
I want to get involved.
Out of his area, and he's clearly bored. He's like, all right, well, the defence has been too good this season. I've not really had much to do, and yeah, once again he came rushing out of his area, clattered into someone, and he got away with it this time.
He did.
So he needs to calm it down.
Well, Casemiro as well. Maybe they're sleeper agents. Every now and then someone just goes, do something nuts. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about Nick Pope further in a short while, but yeah, definitely the highlight of. Although was it a low light for you? Because I mean, being a Sunderland fan, presumably you were annoyed. You know, but we'll come to that. We'll come to that. Vish, your highlight of the weekend.
My highlight of the weekend was 10 minutes into BT Score, hosted by the ridiculous Jules Breach. there was a genuinely lovely moment, devoid of any pretense, and it was when Ravi Savage saw 10 minutes in that his son had scored for the Green Rovers. It's Charlie Savage's first goal in professional football. And for a bloke who, you know, he's not many people like because of his carry-on, it was quite a very sweet, sincere moment. And it cut through all the bullshit you get with pundits having to play characters and stuff like that. I mean, they got battered 3-1 in the end,
yes,
by Bristol Rovers, yeah, but a lovely moment nonetheless.
Yeah, well, Duncan Ferguson could get a tune out of everybody. He just squeezes as hard as possible, and then eventually something will happen. My highlight of the weekend. Well, I'll start with one that was nearly my highlight. Was when David Raya nearly got to the end of was it a corner when he for Brentford when he went up for the header? Because my highlight the other week was when Melier had an effort on target, and I thought I'm all for this. Goalkeepers winning headers in the box, so he should have done better. But as he didn't, he went sort of quite tamely won. I thought, well, I can't have that. So mine would be in the Tottenham game against Nottingham Forest. Spurs won, of course, cementing that fourth spot. Richarlison playing like a man possessed. Obviously very angry midweek. He said that this season has been shit, to quote him. He was angry with Conte. He was angry with everybody. And he just was busy. And he smashes one in the first 5 minutes or whatever it was. And then does this sort of shush kind of sign, puts his finger to his lips, presumably shushing Antonio Conte, the man who started him.
Maybe.
Yeah. And then, of course, it was ruled out for offside with VAR. Poor Richie.
The great thing about that, I think, is at the end of the game, Conte bigged up Richarlison. Mm. And I think it was something about the fact that he recognised a kindred shithouse, didn't he?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Someone who is a bit, loose.
Maybe this is 4D chess. Maybe it will eventually get the best out of him.
Yeah.
Probably at another club.
But yeah, there was an element of like, you know what? I would have done exactly the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And good on you.
That's right, yeah. So a good win for Spurs nonetheless. Right, everybody, before we get to what happened on the South Coast in the Premier League, our beloved match of the day, of course, an absolute institution of a television programme in this country, has been around since 1964 and shows the highlights every Saturday night for those who are not in the UK. But I'm sure many people outside the UK will have heard us talk about it and are aware of it. But its coverage was very different on Saturday and Sunday. This was because Gary Lineker stepped back, of course, from presenting the show over a BBC investigation into his social media usage. And in a tweet, Gary Lineker compared the language used surrounding the government's new policies for asylum seekers to that used in 1930s Germany, and the BBC ruled that this breached their impartiality guidelines. Now, of course, everybody in this country will be very well aware of all this kind of stuff, but just in case anybody wasn't aware or they were unsure or they've been under a rock or abroad, that's been the situation. So very, very strange. And then, of course, the other pundits, Ian Wright and Alan Shearer, announced they would boycott Match of the Day on the weekend. And everybody pulled out. Nobody wanted to break the picket line wisely. So it meant the BBC broadcast a 20-minute version of the programme with no theme tune, commentary, interviews or punditry. It was like watching a sort of an extended YouTube highlight or so. It was with the world feed. It was very, very strange
without
indeed.
Without the crazy electro music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that they didn't use the theme tune.
I love it. Like, no, we're not going to besmirch the theme tune in the scab match of the day.
Yeah. But I mean, it was crazy.
Wasn't even called match of the day, was it? It was Premier League highlight.
Yeah, right. So to not have it was very, very strange indeed. I mean, it would be a bit like saying there's going to be no news bulletin today or something, you know, in a footballing sort of way. The BBC announced this morning, though, that Gary Lineker will be returning to air and there will be a review of their social media guidelines. There was an apology to Gary Lineker as well. So here we are, gentlemen. Vish, what did you make of it all?
Kind of not really the point, but the fact that it was a 20-minute version was like, you know, sometimes when you see those ball-in-play stats in a football match, you know, yeah. It's only in play for 40 minutes. Only 20 minutes of football match of the day. I thought it was incredible that after the last couple of years, well, the last 3 years, really, this government still doesn't understand that you can't take on football at its own game, essentially. You can't go to football and try and challenge it in a way that is just far beyond your comprehension. And I think it highlights the fact that with all the stuff about how the game has lost an element of its soul, there is so much good anchoring it. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking specifically in this country where there is obviously a lot of bad in the game as well. And it was encouraging to see. And it's kind of a little bit irritating, but because you only see it when it's being tested. But I suppose when the game is being tested, when anyone's values are being tested, is when you need to see it most. And I can't really complain about that, to be honest. It was remarkable to see. The one, just before I like pass this on, I think the one important thing, and it's something my dad mentioned when I chatted to him about this over the weekend, and the reason I bring my dad into it is my dad came from a country of great civil war where the Sri Lankan Civil War only ended in 2009,
It ended brutally.
Oh, and even the end of it is still up for debate in some people's eyes because
it shouldn't have been ended like that. If you see what I mean,
because of the coverage of it.
Yeah.
And my dad made a very good point. Is his main fear was that this shouldn't be framed as something against the BBC. This is to do with the BBC's management, because at the time where the rhetoric is going a certain way in this country, it's never been more important to have a national broadcaster who. Has to hold, hold truth to power, really. And I think it's important to square that in all this. But ultimately, it is just comical seeing how this panned out, because not only have they had to, row back on their original decision, but they've had to give Lineker even more rope now. It's amazing.
It's crazy.
Officially, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the BBC are terrified of the government. It's very, very obvious. This current government, the bill that Gary Lineker was talking about has been very, very controversial for good reason. There's plenty of reading you can do around that. And this debate has become about BBC impartiality guidelines. And that has now blown up so spectacularly that just everybody looks bad, really. And it's fascinating to see how that's played out. And as Vish said, the way that football, or certainly the people involved with Match of the Day, some players as well indicating that they wouldn't speak to the BBC, has been really, really impressive. Football is so vulnerable to populism, in theory, and it won't be used like that. So often we see examples where it refuses to stop taking the knee, or to get involved in a situation like this, and it's kind of encouraging.
Author Andrew Hunter Murray said on Twitter, which I quite enjoyed, if I was worried about people comparing me to 1930s Germany, my next move probably wouldn't be to shut down all criticism on the National Broadcast Service. Obviously, don't want to kind of go off too much on a tangent here, but this affected our ability. I mean, we've already have the blackout. You know, we already can't watch a lot of football. This affected football fans across this land, which is why we want to talk about it. I mean, David, what did you make of it all?
Yeah, I think, like both guys have pointed out, I think the most important thing was the solidarity across the board. I think that was really good to see. And look, also, Lineker should be able to say whatever he wants. Whoever it may be should be able to say whatever they want. But what I did like about it as well, I think this is the most important part, Lineker didn't back down either. So I think he could have easily done that. I remember a clip of him on the news when he was getting in his car, and they were like, oh, are you going to bring down the tweet? Do you regret what you tweeted and everything like that? And Lineker was like, no, and just got in the car. So the fact that he stuck by it as well makes it even more stronger and more pronounced. Yeah. And I think that's what you have to do, because it's so, so easy to delete it, put out a little copy and paste apology on your notes app. But he didn't, he stuck by it. And I think that's what's important.
Well, Lineker will be back soon on the BBC. Gentlemen,
I'm looking forward to the quips.
Yeah, which there will be.
I'm predicting some sort of good play will be compared to 1990s Germany.
Don't. He's not going to listen, is he? So it's. I'm fine.
We should save it. We
just
should do our,
it out there.
Well, we should do our own like
alternative
GB News.
Match of the day.
Yeah, like GB News did.
No, we're not going near GBBs, yeah. Okay? let's talk about Bournemouth 1 at Liverpool 0. I'd like to start with a man who certainly could never be restricted in what he says or tweets. Liam Gallagher tweeted, "Guess who's not back? #LFC.
It's not even a good tweet, is it?
It doesn't need to be.
As long as there's no punctuation. And you understand what he means.
Yes.
And it's violently, aggressively snippy. Yes, please.
I mean, let's be honest, like often massive, pop stars and celebrities, you can tell that their tweets are curated by somebody else. Liam Gallagher, with every letter, not even word letter, he proves that he's very much in control of his Twitter feed.
Marcus, are you still Klopp out?
Come on. Look, I'm glad you asked me that, Jim, because obviously after the Real Madrid game, I was suggesting that it was quite sad to see, and I wanted Klopp to be able to turn around the situation. My question was, and still is, can he do that? And is this Liverpool team, cooked? They are. The injuries, I've bored of hearing myself say about how, last season, nearly the perfect season, to then pick yourself up again. It's very, very difficult. And what this side have done, or a lot of this side and Klopp have done, has been utterly phenomenal. You can't stress that enough. And so my question is, well, can he turn it around? I don't know. If it carried on like this into next season, then it would be a situation where, do you keep him? I think he's got loads of capital in the bank, of course. But come the summer, could there be a difficult conversation? I think if he wants to stay, he will stay. And this kind of stuff. And then, of course, when Liverpool won 7-0, a lot of people said, oh, you've been critical of Liverpool and da-da-da-da-da. I didn't get any tweets from those people this weekend, incidentally. So I don't know whether they've been silenced or not.
It was a complete freak result, seriously. Yeah.
Was it a freak result?
Yes, they beat a team that had 11 games in 31 days. They were Manning United were clearly absolutely knackered. And
I thought you meant Bournemouth.
No. Yeah. So they weren't back. It was just a freak result.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah. There you are, David. Come sit next to me.
I didn't say it. He said it, innit? So I agree with him, but I didn't say it.
And will the history books have that in brackets? 7-0. Freak result. Nothing to see here. But Bournemouth.
The thing that's going to be... It's funny. I was a little bit annoyed by this result because I was almost
Bournemouth
like,
are now better than Man United?
Well, that's how it works, yeah. Remember that period where the US were world champions because they beat Spain?
Oh, what a period it was.
I was a bit annoyed because I was like, you can't go and pump Manchester United like that.
Disrespect a club like Man United.
And then do this because not only do you in turn accidentally shit on again the club I support, but you basically do down any kind of sense of goodwill there because you're not only are you losing to a team at the bottom, but the way they lost to them as well.
Gary O'Neill says after the game, well, I'm a little bit disappointed we didn't score more.
Yeah, that's where we are with this.
Well, we were talking last week after the Arsenal-Bournemouth game about how actually this is the point in the season where fixtures are at their hardest because everyone's fighting for something, particularly down the bottom. Those teams are suddenly, you'd rather play a team in mid-table than a team down the bottom from about now. Yeah. And I think that is just this in action.
Yeah, I mean, was it revenge for the 9-0 in a way?
I suppose it was.
They've both taken 3 points off each other, Jim.
I don't know if Gary O'Neill is a vengeful man, but he's got what he wants.
He doesn't strike me as that, but it is a huge win for Bournemouth and they deserved it. And old Philip Billing has chipped in with a few goals.
He was brilliant.
Old Phil Bill. He loves it. And Bournemouth now, 24 points. The same as West Ham and Leicester, 1 point behind Everton. I mean, the bottom of the table is it's extraordinary reading. Obviously, we've got a title race on our hands. We'll come to that. The battle for fourth. Well, Liverpool are not playing their part there. I think, is that the thing that concerns everybody, that Tottenham will represent the Premier League and England in the Champions League next season? I don't know, but they've got a good win, and so we shouldn't be too
I mean, this is massive for Spurs and Newcastle, isn't it? Because we're all thinking, okay, this is where Liverpool do their thing and they motor up the table. But actually...
Well, that's right.
I feel less certain about that. that now.
But down the bottom, though, that is bad news for the rest of the teams down there, because they probably thought, right, Bournemouth are playing Liverpool after that 7-0. Great, okay, right, what can we do ourselves? But Bournemouth are there. You know, they're only only in the relegation zone because of goal difference. And it's so tight. I mean, it's Palace down now. That's where it is. But Bournemouth, that kind of win, it gives you confidence. It gives you a fighting chance. And the fact is, David, Bournemouth could have won the game by more. They created a lot of chances.
Absolutely.
And they look great.
Yeah, I thought man of the match.
And also only just got beat by Arsenal, I should say. You know, yeah. A great performance at the Emirates. So there's a little bit of a momentum to pick themselves up from that and beat Liverpool. The confidence is now back.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Ouattara, for me, who was man of the match along with Billing, should have scored a few more. They really did just keep getting inside Liverpool. Once again, Liverpool trying to recapture that old press and then getting completely done on it every single time because the players haven't got the recovery pace as they once had.
Yeah.
162 combined injuries this season for Liverpool. It's the most out of any Premier League
160,
squad. 162 combined, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's absolutely insane. By far and away the worst in the Premier League. And it's just so notable in the way, and this is why you have to question Klopp as well, because he's still want them to go with a certain approach and they clearly can't execute what he wants to do anymore. And Bournemouth really, really took them apart here when they wanted to, and it could have been a lot more. But Bournemouth are excellent.
But do you not think though, with that Liverpool win against Manchester United, Klopp has tried to kind of change the style a bit. He is more aware than anybody is about the situation there, about the players, the injuries. You know, Van Dijk is a shadow of the player he was, partly to do with injuries, partly to do with the sort of contact situation. So you've got the injuries, you've got the fatigue, you've got the ageing, all that kind of stuff. He has tried to sort of change the style a little bit, and they are sixth, do you know what I mean? It's not like battling relegation, but it would never be with that squad, of course, and that manager. But I think it's been very, very difficult for Liverpool. And I think my point, sorry, was going to be that off the back of the 7-0 against Manchester United, where it did seem like a bit more of the old Liverpool, to quote Klopp again, you know, it felt like a day of last season. It's kind of like, well, let's try and do that again. Do you think there was a temptation for that? And actually, no, that this season, certainly, that's just not on the table.
Yeah, I think there is a temptation. I think this is the problem with Liverpool. They're very much resting on the laurels of when they were once good. So in terms of style, but also the players as well, there isn't much competition for places there. He's got a lot of favourites, a few people that are just constantly in the team as well. And it's interesting as well. After the game, Trent Alexander-Arnold said Bournemouth wanted it more.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that. I mean, he told everyone, oh, Bournemouth wanted it. What? That's just not good enough for a team like Liverpool, especially after that win what they had against Man United.
No, and he also said they you know, it's unacceptable. We need to make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again. How many times, Jim, have we heard that from players this season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're just transitional, aren't they, at the moment? Like, the forward line still looks really, really good. There's so much, like, attacking quality to choose from there, but it's just the team are not up to that standard everywhere else. So it just becomes really disjointed really quickly. Yeah.
And then when you get Mo Salah with his penalty miss, you know, such a reliable player, has been one of the best players in world football for a fair few years now. It's not like, oh, the keeper saved or it came over the post. Vish, that was a shocking penalty. I know we can all have our moments, but blimey.
It was so wide that even from our angle on TV, you could tell it was going wide.
Yeah.
We only got one replay, didn't we? Yeah.
It's like when you haven't worked out how the penalty system works on FIFA.
Yeah, when you just get it. Yeah. Yes.
It is a bit like that.
So strange. And the reaction to the penalty miss was, in terms of the minutes that followed, there was no sense of like, a bit more urgency.
Trying to atone for their error.
Yeah, there was a bit like, oh, this is just one of those days. And it's like, you're fighting for four trophies last year. You don't have one of these days. Yeah. You shouldn't be resigned to one of these days.
And they really, you know, it would be huge if they could finish fourth. But you just want, you look around and you think, you know, do they have the fight for that? You know, because, as I say, we're making the observations because of the performances of us, but also because of what's coming out of the mouths of the manager and the players.
Yeah.
You know, your hands are tied. You know, you want to try and say, well, no, they are fighting, they are this, that, and the other. They're not, by their own admission. You know, this is desperately strange. And I know last week we were talking about a great performance and so on, and it sounds like, oh, well, hang on, you're changing your tune or you're flipping around. Well, we're only reacting to what is going on.
Yeah. I'm surprised that actually this result came after the Man United result for obvious reasons, but I think you see this a lot with when a sort of a big club gets into a situation where they're not having the kind of season you'd expect. Everything looks difficult. Mm. Everything looks like it's about to go wrong even before it actually has. And then that sort of sense of
dread almost. Like you, yeah. you see it translate to the players.
Mm. By the way, chaps, before we move on, talking of Liverpool, if you will, ex-Liverpool man Steven Gerrard has reportedly flown to Istanbul to hold talks about becoming the next Trabzonspor manager.
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what that says to me is that jobs for the boys might be over in the Premier League.
Right.
I think in previous generations, even after things not quite working out at Villa, Gerrard might get another crack at a Premier League job a little while afterwards.
But it could but be you, his decision.
Get, absolutely, it could be his decision. So I think he's got some very fond memories of Istanbul.
maybe
so you,
that's
you'd back
it.
Him to come back in any game,
yeah,
wouldn't
true, you? True, true. You certainly would. But, I don't know. I think that Gerrard, I would have thought that's maybe more his decision, but you're... I mean,
the two things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, are they? But I think it's much harder to get a job in the Premier League.
Yeah, but I think for him, you know, having not done it at Villa and been sacked, I think to go away from the league as he did initially, your reputation could be rebuilt in Turkey.
Yeah, and this is not an observation on Gerrard or Lampard, really, but that just, I don't know.
Why are you mentioning Lampard?
Because
he's staying when he's going, isn't he?
In the Premier League.
He's staying in the UK. I'll stay in the UK, you
yeah.
go.
Yeah.
And then you come back and I'll go.
Why are you stood next to Nicky Butt? why is Paul Scholes in the sea?
Oh, dear.
Why is he just hanging out in Norfolk, Paul Scholes?
Well, let's go to Nicky Butt's old club, Newcastle United.
Ooh.
They beat Wolves 2-1. They get their first league win since mid-January to leapfrog Liverpool and bring them back into the race for the top four, eh? Yes, you mentioned it earlier, David, old Nicky Pope.
Mm.
Lucky boy, it seemed to be. I mean, with VAR and so on, could you believe that decision wasn't given? I mean, Eddie Howe said, I felt Jimenez was on his way down before contact was made. You might say I'm biased, but that's my Newcastle perspective. He is
very
such,
nice.
Such a company man, isn't he?
Yeah.
As we know, of course. But I mean, presumably you thought it was red card.
Yeah, I thought so as well. But yeah. I mean,
that seemed to be the general feel.
Yeah, I mean, to go against your point, I don't trust VAR though. So, you know what I mean? It was no surprise to me because, I mean, it's one of the most consistently shit things there is at the moment.
You say you don't trust it. Like, the images are faulty or you think you just.
Well, no,
I mean, it's usage. It's actual execution of it is garbage. I mean, why wasn't it used then?
Yeah.
You know, it just there's a lot of things what happens with it. Mm. I mean, I don't want to go down the VAR hole because Jesus Christ, it's so boring. but yeah, it doesn't get executed properly, so you're going to consistently have these errors. Just do away with it.
Yeah. Anyway. Is VAR hole like a K hole?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. But
pretending you don't know what I'm talking about.
Did you say cake hole? I'm very unfamiliar with that. Oh, Marcus.
Oh God! Full victorious. Any excuse to bring a victorious sponge?
Exactly. Yeah. And channeling the spirit of Chris Morris then. but yes, it wasn't the worst goalkeeping error of the weekend, that Nick Pope one, of course, even though he got away with it. In League Two, did you see Bradford goalkeeper Harry Lewis caught the ball outside of his area because he got slightly confused with the markings of the rugby pitch.
Blue.
Yeah. Well, I had an element of sympathy for him, but basically the 22 line, which is, you know, 4 yards beyond his box, he really should have a bit more perspective. He's a professional footballer.
He got a bit confused, isn't he? Because he caught it.
About 3 yards out of his box.
Yeah, and then kicked it to touch, and then and then drank piss out of someone else's shoe.
Like a gentleman.
And you know what he didn't do, though? He didn't talk to the referee, did he?
He didn't talk to the referee.
The captain does that.
Yeah. He respected that, but he was given the donkey of the game and had to do a yard of ale. But it was mildly amusing. But back to the Newcastle game, Isaac scored.
Yeah.
Lovely header from a Kieran Trippier delivery.
Yeah.
I love watching Kieran Trippier play football.
Yeah,
such
he's
a delightful
magnificent
player
to watch, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Pete was saying.
And he's proving everybody wrong who said he shouldn't go to Newcastle.
Is he, though?
Pete was saying the other week he doesn't think that Alexander Isak is going to be prolific. And I think he hasn't been there for that long, so we don't know whether that's going to be true or not.
I understood Pete's.
I agree. I watched him regularly in Spain, and he never came across as a prolific player. But I think he's going to be a very, very good striker, very complete forward in terms of what he does.
Do you think he'll play down the middle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he can be a number nine for them, but also he can play different roles. So I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a 25, 30 goal a season, man.
More Firmino than Fowler.
I don't think Newcastle bought him for that as well. I think that, you know, they want somebody to contribute with the midfield as well and bring others into play.
Yeah, he's not quite a Firmino type, though, is he?
He's more someone who
can dovetail with the, you know, with the people out wide, essentially. Because a lot of the joy he got yesterday in open play was from the left.
Mm-hmm.
and say maximum kind of like either dovetailing with him or mm-hmm. using that vacant space in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think if
a fluid sort of dynamic front
yeah,
three.
Yeah.
Because he switched his front three.
And I think that's a better front three because he's more mobile than Callum Wilson. He offers a bit more to everyone else than mm-hmm. Callum Wilson. And you still have the option of, I think Isak could play with Callum Wilson in that front three, mm-hmm. all told. But if you've got that midfield as well, then he just gives you something a bit extra. Because well, Guimarães loves joining them, but he yeah. can stretch the play. So Guimarães has got more to work with.
Well, I did think to myself after, you know, when Howe made that change and it's a different front three, you think, there's a bit of strength and depth in there. They've got options in Newcastle because if you look, they don't have the star names of some other sides. If they can get into the Champions League, those star names will start to appear.
They'll have to buy a few more players then, I think. I think the squad can, honestly, I think the squad can look really thin at times. And there's a couple of players in there I'm not too sure I would trust in a long season in four competitions. St. Maximum, I think, is really impressive. But again, consistency. And Wilson as well just always seems to be brought down by injuries.
And this is funny though, isn't it? Because those are some of those players that some of those names are names which you would have put forward as their best players fairly recently. But the kind of ruthlessness needed to upgrade your squad to get to a point where you're going to challenge on all fronts is quite spectacular.
Indeed it is. But another poor result for Wolves, and they are in the relegation scrap. I don't think they'll go down. But they're 13th. They're only 5 points off. The bottom of the league, for crying out loud. But we'll talk more about the relegation scrap in the second half, everybody. Now, let's have a break.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You better get your finger out, all right, and make sure that you get their fucking results.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Right, it's now time for a bonus edition of Betfair's Popular Bet Builder. Select the most popular pre-made football bet builders using Betfair's handy app, and you can add them to your bet slip in just one tap. Normally, we build our own Ramble Popular Bet Builder on the Friday preview show for a particular game happening each weekend, but today, seeing as the Champions League is back, we thought we'd have another crack at winning some money for charity. Our chosen game is Liverpool versus Real Madrid on Wednesday night. David, why don't you start us off?
My man Karim Benzema, last goal scorer.
Last goal scorer. I like that. Good one. You seem shocked. I mean, he probably will score.
I know, it's just the last goal.
Yeah, but he does that, doesn't he? Benzema seldom gets his work
done
early.
He's a stat padder, you were saying, yeah. He always, when the game's already won, he goes and gets his goals. He's a bully, what you're saying.
Like you are to me now. Jim, what have you gone for?
I'm going to go for both teams to score. I can't wait for this game. I think it's going to be an absolute ding-dong.
Yes. Vish, what do you reckon?
I reckon for the very same reason that I'm going to go for over 3.5 goals. I think, you know, Real Madrid are going to come out on top, but Liverpool are going to give it a right hot go.
Yes, okay. A right hot go. I'm going to go for Real Madrid to win, quite simply, because I agree with what you're saying. I think Real Madrid will win. Liverpool need goals. They've not been great at the back. They're going to have to leave themselves a little bit open at the back. If they want those goals, Real Madrid will win. So we've got Karim Benzema as last goal scorer, both teams to score, over 3.5 goals, and Real Madrid to win. A £5 bet with Betfair on that popular bet builder returns £118.55. And if we win all that money, we'll go to Prostate Cancer UK. We'll be back with another round of Betfair's popular bet builder later this week. Exclusive to Betfair Sportsbook. T's and C's apply. Got to be over 18 to get involved. For more information on responsible gambling, head to begambleaware.org. Back to the Premier League, gentlemen. Fulham 0, Arsenal 3. Jim, myself and Mick Jagger were at the game.
Brian Cox was there as well.
We think it was Brian Cox. Not D-Ream, the older Scottish actor.
Yes, Succession Brian Cox. I have it on authority that his son is an Arsenal fan, so that may...
On authority?
Uh-huh. My mate said it.
did we see what Mick Jagger had written on his hat, by the way?
No.
You haven't seen this?
Go on.
He had DILF.
DILF.
I'm not even kidding. He had DILF on his hat. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's technically a GILF, isn't he?
He might be a GILF at this point.
That's a good point, yeah.
It says a lot about how he sees himself.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't know what it means.
Also, this is the thing
he knows what it means.
I'll wear it, don't worry.
That's Mick Jagger.
I know. I was enjoying it.
Sounded a little bit like...
The silence was reverent.
It sounded a little bit like Mandela.
No, it didn't. Do you want Mandela?
I do. No, I don't.
Was that an effort? Was that an attempt? Let's move on swiftly. But yeah, so we were there, Jim. It was an easy win for
Arsenal.
It was
an easy win, wasn't it? Mm. I really enjoyed that about it. You less so.
I genuinely enjoyed watching Arsenal play like that. All joking aside, I haven't seen them in the flesh this season. I have been notified of their brilliance this season, funnily enough. The league table does no lie. But to see them in the flesh play like that, I remember just thinking, I can't be annoyed at all at Fulham. Arsenal were superb. Absolutely superb. Like I said to David on the way in, I said, I don't want to over-egg this, but like, I think the last time I saw such a confident display of passing, such an effective display of passing like that, for me personally, I'm not talking about on TV, in the flesh, was when we went over and saw Guardiola's Barcelona. Do you know what I mean? Now, clearly they're not that level, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying, for me, at a game, just being like flipping neck, almost in, not quite, maybe awe might be too strong a word, but not far off it.
Yeah.
They were that good.
They've been really good at controlling games in the midfield in particular this season. Mm. And there's been a couple of times lately where it's felt like things have been a bit nervier than they need to be. And this was a really, really good return to just getting stuff done professionally and quickly in terms of setting out your stall and making it a stress-free afternoon for those of us who are invested in that. But yeah, I think Joao Pellegrini is a huge miss though, isn't he? That has to be mentioned because Fulham's record without him in terms of not just points, but the goals they concede is really different. And it was the midfield, wasn't it, where Arsenal won that game?
Yeah, I mean, Pellegrini is he's missing the game because he's got 10 yellow cards this season. I mean, he would have probably got two more yellow cards if he'd have started that game, you know. But he's a huge miss. But I don't think he would have made a huge difference. I think it would have still been a fairly easy Arsenal victory. But I mean, what did you think of Arsenal's performance, David? Because as I say, I've just somewhat, very, very contextually compared them or likened them to Guardiola's Barcelona. But there's a lot of context to what I said there, so don't misquote me, you bastards.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think what they do impressively, and particularly this game, I noticed they did it, is how they create overloads in wide areas.
Yes.
Now, I think a lot of teams, they set up where they've got their winger out on their own. And I know Man United did it at the weekend with Antony, and he was always just out on his own without any support. So he'd either have a choice of having to spread the ball to the other side or cross it in. Now, what Arsenal do, they always get maybe two or three players just on the edge of the box and any of them to arch into the penalty area. Now, Trossard had two left-footed assists against Fulham, but he was also appearing on the right as well.
Yep. Yeah.
So the rotational play between the forwards and the midfielders is phenomenal. And that's a lot to deal with as a team to defend against when you've got so many numbers on the edge of that penalty area, but also streaming into the penalty area. And they were excellent at this.
And where's Arteta learned that? Where's Arteta learned that, by the way?
From Guardiola. Of course he has. Honestly.
Rangers. No, obviously from Guardiola. But also, when they do the overloads, as you say, and so on, it is not to the detriment about what's going on in the middle of the pitch.
But you know why that is?
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I want to hear if you know.
So I think why that is because the guy who picks up the ball from his centre-backs, the guy who's always an option in the middle, is somehow their left-back.
Yeah. Do you know
Zinchenko
what? I thought you were going to say Thomas Partey, then who did a great game, but you're
the
right.
The thing you'd say about a player like that is they're everywhere. Mm. And actually, Zinchenko isn't everywhere. He's just in the right place.
You're right. And it was funny, actually, because when Kieran Tierney came on, or we were talking about Tierney and this chat that maybe he might move on just to get... Because he should be starting. Yeah, he's a great fullback, but I mean, you can't...
But he's linked to Newcastle, isn't he?
So. Yeah, exactly. Right enough. That's what we were talking about. So, yeah. And I went, yeah, and I suddenly thought, who's Arsenal's left back today? And I was like, oh no, it is Zinchenko.
He's everywhere, yeah.
But you're right, the way he picks the ball up, and it is that classic thing that we've seen Guardiola sides do. Is they
inverted fullback.
Totally, yeah.
They're very, very good at covering that space.
Such another option.
When Zinchenko's elsewhere.
Yeah,
and but also, if you, with all due respect to Nathan Aken, who's having a strong season, Zinchenko would be taking Man City's team to a different level right now.
Yeah.
If you think of the issues that they have with João Cancelo's personality and all that, and... I know we'll talk about the Palace game briefly, but they look so bereft of genuine ideas. Their only hope at the moment to open up games seems to be shifting the ball quickly as an individual, getting Foden or Grealish or Haaland to create a half space out of nothing. They have no real structure beyond just being able to, you know, tick over 80%, you know, possession, really.
I think hugely, hugely significant as well is obviously the return of Gabriel Jesus. He looked lively when he came on. He had a chance he probably should have done better from, but, you know, not going to judge him too harshly for that because he's been out for 3 or 4 months or whatever it is, 3 months. And just the returning players, him, Smith Rowe, Trossard himself, who we thought might be missing for a little while, is so, so welcome.
How well
it could not be more timely.
He's slotted in so
he's been fantastic.
You know, I know obviously he was a bit of a sausage the way he left Brighton and that left a sour taste in their mouth. Not that sausage.
Sour sausage.
Yes. The sausages shouldn't do that, but he managed to. But he was brilliant that day, and he's been very, very good. And you know, it's your sort of day when Fabio Vieira is through on goal and trips himself up and manages to get a free kick for it as well.
You pointed out that Granit Xhaka seemed to give that free kick.
Yeah, he did.
Which, again, is a really welcome addition to his skill set, as far as I'm concerned.
Granit Xhaka was like, you are going to give that to us. And he's like,
Yeah, come on, then. Xhaka just running over to the VAR screen. That is a penalty.
That was absurd, though. Again, there's too many mad things like that happen in the Premier League this season.
Can I ask you, from your perspective, how much of the frustration over the last few windows have you been able to work out have actually been deliberate avoidances of signings that would have meant that you couldn't put this current team together?
Now,
I think back to Vlahovic.
Yeah.
I think, which was what, the January 2021, I think?
That was last year.
Yeah,
2022.
Okay, 2022, yeah. Okay, right.
And seems then, a lot longer ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay. And then you've got Mudryk in this window as well. And if you think of all the people in between that you've signed, and if you take the few months before Vlahovic then, you've got Odegaard for 30 million, you've got Ramsdale, you went on to sign Zinchenko and Jesus before the start of this season, and then you get someone like Trossard in, who was very much second choice, and...
They've all been
brilliant, but I do wonder how much at the time it was like, oh, you know, Arsenal have missed out on that, and probably Mudryk was the first one where, because of maybe where Arsenal were in the league, there wasn't a sense that they missed out. There was an idea that actually they've made a calculated decision not to sign him here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm not sure what the question is among that.
Yes,
but
in terms of like, it feels like even, you know, Trossard's a great example just because of that game yesterday. He's just been brilliant, but that was an understandable level of brilliance from him because you're signing someone who is tried and tested in the Premier League, who wanted to go on to better things.
Are you suggesting that Arsenal at times have just spent huge money? Think about Nicolas Pepe.
Pepe is a big one.
And you think, right, we need a big player, we need something. maybe we won't do that. We won't have that much joined up thinking on it. Let's just get him in, and he'll probably be good. And it
Emery never wanted Pepe. He wanted Wilfred Zaha. Mm. He wanted a player with that very specific skill set of beating a man rather than someone who plays on the counter. And that's, you know, that didn't work for obvious reasons. But this is, they've changed a lot at the boardroom, and the recruitment policy is really, really good now. Trossard's a great example. So clearly he wasn't necessarily the first choice. I think Mudryk, they have identified as a player who's going to go on and potentially be a superstar. But with Trossard, it wasn't just like, he's available, let's get him. Clearly, he's got that skill set to play out wide and deliver, but also to do what Gabriel Jesus has been doing, which with they've missed a little bit when Nketiah was deputising as good as he was, which is bringing other players in. You get more out of Martinelli and Saka if you've got someone who can essentially play like a central pivot. And that's no mistake. That's no accident. Also, the fact that they simply wouldn't pay what was asked for Mudryk because they thought it was too much and it's going to affect the budget elsewhere is a really good thing. There is joined up thinking there, and it is an absolute joy to see it being, to see Arsenal being run sensibly for the first time in a long time, and also without kind of certain constraints on them, which obviously Arsene Wenger had to work with for years and years, is refreshing and welcome.
Yeah, very true, very true. Well, of course, they are top of the league, 5 points. Man City kept the pressure on Arsenal with a scrappy 1-0 away to Crystal Palace. Was it Eliseo who gave the penalty away? It's like Palace working very hard and then one of your four players does that. You're like, crying out loud. Interestingly, Edison was made to wear Crystal Palace socks due to a kit clash.
You could have all the money in the world and still... That can happen.
And they're still calling it a kit clash. But it's a kit blend. You want the kits to clash.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
We've made it many times on this podcast. Nobody is listening. Palace, they have failed to register a single shot on target in their last three Premier League games, making them the first side to achieve this. Is it an achievement? Since the Premier League started recording game-by-game shot data in 2003. Now, Palace are in trouble. You know, they haven't won in goodness knows how many games, certainly not in their last six. They seem to have a decent enough collection of points, you know, a few games ago. And you think, well, they're just enough. Now they're 3 points above the relegation zone. They're not scoring. They're not winning. Who's going to get dragged in? And they're up in 12th. And you think, well, but we've not been looking up that high because of the points tally and because it's a fair few places above. You look at it now, and you think, bloody hell, are they the ones that come from sort of not nowhere, but they're the ones who get dragged into it. And actually, we've not been focusing on them at all.
Yeah, it does seem very Palace that they are both 3 points above the relegation zone and also 12th, which is seen as like their newly established comfort level.
Yes.
Which is what they wanted to push on from when they got Vieira in. It was one of the problems with Roy Hodgson. They felt like they were having the same season over and over again. Now they're having two seasons in one. So
yeah, indeed. Yeah.
I mean, it's a fascinating thing speaking to Palace fans, who a few of them have already, you know, they're already done with Vieira, because there was a sense that he was just, he started to do that thing where he's coming up with a few excuses now, and there's very few solutions involved. And it's strange because you see their team on paper and you're like, well, God, there's a lot of attacking talent there. Mm. You know, Elise, you think of Eze, even Zaha. I say even Zaha because it feels like this might be his last season at Palace. Mm-hmm. But there are no patterns of play. Everyone kind of gets the ball and gets the chance to do their thing with the ball. But no one, there doesn't feel any real cohesion behind, like, right, let's just be defensively solid. I mean, no shot in three games is actually disgraceful.
It's damning.
It's really, it's really bad. I mean, I think the XG last season was 0.99. This season it's 0.56.
Yeah, I mean,
so they're not creating chances. It's not just they're not hitting the target. They aren't creating things. They're playing a lot deeper, a lot more risk averse. Mm-hmm. Why Vieira's decided to go down that route, I'm not too sure. Maybe only he knows that one. But it just, it kind of does look like a team that is maybe reaching the end with the particular manager. Honestly, I mean, he looks like an extension of Roy Hodgson in some ways. Just games always just on a knife edge, very, very tense as well. And it's really, really similar to that. It's that negative and that dull.
While we're talking about teams who could get dragged into it, I mean, Leicester City are in it. They've lost four on the bounce in the league. They are only out of the relegation zone on goal difference. And again, like, you know, if they were to go down, I mean, I keep saying, well, but I don't think they will. But so somebody's got to go. Three teams will go. And we keep saying, well, Bournemouth, they're the small side. People would say, well, they're kind of a championship club anyway. I personally wouldn't say that. But, you know, it's a small stadium. All the rest of it. So you already think, right, let's... that's in a neat little package, off they go. And you think, no, no, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Southampton have been pretty poor for a while now. They've been kind of hanging on, you know, it's almost reminiscent of Coventry in the 90s, you know. And you think, well, no, they get a good point against Manchester United away from home. Could have been even more. And you look at it and you think there could be a major team going down. It could be, you could have Everton, Leicester or West Ham. Well, bloody hell, we could have all three, although I think that might be slightly unlikely. But Leicester City themselves, you know, a side who you think to yourself, you know, they are the top scorers down there. I mean, I think you have to go up to Brentford in ninth to see a side who have scored more goals than them.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're conceding loads. And it's, you know, you do the math, Jim.
From 12th down, everyone looks doomed.
Exactly. Somehow,
which is a really strange thing. Yeah. Every time you see these teams, you think, oh, you kind of forget where everyone is. And you think, oh, they're sort of hovering around 17th, 18th.
But on form, if you take, you know, if you're going to take maybe the last six games or even the last four, actually, Southampton, form-wise, even though they're bottom, have probably been the best
thing is, this weekend, aside from Leicester themselves, a lot of the teams down there picked up points this weekend. Mm. And they are starting to just, you know...
Signs of life.
Exactly.
Leeds and Southampton, what have they got in common? They both made proactive changes. They both changed their coach.
Yeah.
They wanted to go to a new style. They could clearly see that there was nothing changing with the current regime. Mm. Now, look at Leicester, and I think look at Crystal Palace as well. They're clearly on a downturn. There doesn't seem to be many signs of life there. I think in Leicester's defence, or to Leicester's advantage, I think they've probably got the best player down there in James Maddison.
Yep.
So they'll be hoping that he can try and, you know, dig them out. But I've brought this up before on the podcast. Leicester just seem like a club desperate to get to the end of the season.
Yeah.
Players, coach, club in general as well, and maybe start again, because a lot of things haven't worked. There's going to be a lot of players.
Well, they've got a good manager as well. Yeah, we've known what
he's okay. Well, I wouldn't go as far as good.
He's produced that. I mean, he's won them the FA Cup, do you know what I mean? He's got a bit of capital in the bank.
Yeah, he's got credit in the bank. A lot of these guys have. Moyes has got credit in the bank as well, and people keep using that to defend these guys.
I don't think Moyes does anymore.
West Ham fans have said he's still got a bit of credit there. So.
Well, he's got a credit card and he very much needs to pay it back at some point.
until you have to pay it back, you've got credit.
honestly, getting back to Leicester, just you got a lot of players, like, you don't know what their futures are going to be as well. Tielemans, people like that. Vardy's probably finished, you know, maybe looking to move abroad or something just to finish his career. So you got a lot of players like that. Do they really care? Do they really give a shit what happens to Leicester at the end of the season? Does it really matter?
I think Leicester are the best side down there on paper. And I would say that they have the best manager down there on paper. That would be my argument. Appreciate you may not agree. And you're right. I think it's kind of like, let's just get to the summer and then we can have a rethink. We can back Rodgers, or maybe we could change him if they feel. But actually, lads, you're in this. You can't do that. You do not have the luxury. You've got a goal difference cushion. That is it.
There's always one club who gets sucked into it, I think, and doesn't think that they are there, but then they end up being involved. Leicester could be that
club. But there are five of those teams there.
But that's what we were just talking about, Palace. You know, I think that this is why it's such an incredible...
Get rid of all of them. Let's start again.
The thing for Leicester that gives them potentially a bit of an advantage, depending on how this goes, is that Johnny Evans is back soon. And he's absolutely massive for them. He might need to use whatever is left in the tank for his whole career for the next 12 games. But he should be a huge, huge addition.
He should be. Quick note on Chelsea, though. That's three wins in a row in all competitions.
While it lasted, wasn't it?
Three lovely goals from Chelsea. Not the kind of entertainment we've been used to seeing them produce this season. First time they've scored three since October in a game. But there were some cracking goals there. And it felt like, you know, how many times have we said such and such are back? But it did feel like that. Potter seems to be a little bit more pleased.
Yeah.
But we look forward, you know, perhaps to, you know, in their next game in the league. Which is, of course, at home to Everton, where they lose or draw, because that is the way this season's going with this sort of thing. You know?
I think they've happened upon an inadvertent sweet spot here, where obviously they're still in the Champions League, and that'll take their main focus.
Yeah.
And because of where they are in the league, they can't really make too much of a dent in terms of European places anyway. So they almost have not quite a free hit, but they can approach these games with a little less pressure.
The pressure's off in the league and the biggest prize is still there to play for.
Exactly.
Right?
You're likening this to Moyes' Man United. Aren't you? That's what you're doing.
Why would you remind me of that?
You're speaking from experience.
Liverpool lost after beating a 7-0. You bring up Moyes.
You're speaking from experience because, you know, people forget Moyes got Manchester United to a Champions League quarter-final. So it wasn't all bad.
Even the way you're saying that shows me that you don't believe it. You're just saying that to say it.
Did he not?
Slapping his thighs. Laughs in your face.
Do you think Moyes still has credit in the bank at United? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think he has a bank account.
Not at West Ham, but he's got some.
Is he trying to transfer his credit?
I think
he's just getting a lot of angry letters about it.
He's not got a bank account. His shares have been...
You can't pay for one credit card with another credit card, David.
His shares have been watered down. I don't think he's got much there. But he might have a little something. There we are, everybody. Before we go, let's check in on big Duncan Ferguson and the aforementioned Forest Green Rovers. 7 points adrift at the bottom of League One, and they're yet to win in 2023. Not all bad, though. He has been reviewing some vegan croissants on Forest Green's Twitter, and he seemed to be very impressed, of course. He said, they are fantastic, and if you keep on eating one of these a day, you'll look like me in the end.
I'm not really sure what to make of that.
A croissant a day makes you really hard.
As we made the observation, he looks like he's being held against his will in that video,
which we know is impossible.
Exactly. So I think he's fully signed up to veganism. He was delighted to know that chips are vegan. I think we all are. So what a note to end on, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Jim, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
David, pleasure as always.
Thank you.
Vish, it's been real.
Long live chips.
God bless you all. We'll see you soon.
I don't know why that's funny. Oh, chips vegan. Yeah, they are. Oh, thank God.
What do you think they're made of? What animal did you think they're made of?
Well, croissants.
We used to hunt potatoes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
No, you didn't. You're just a violent man.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.